The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. Then there were two. The Super Bowl is set. Oh, my goodness. The 2019 NFL season is down to the Kansas City Chiefs and the San Francisco 49ers. They will meet in Super Bowl LIV in Miami. It's going to be LIT. Am I right, Mr. Wilson?
That's actually not bad. I'll give credit for that.
What? When did Rob Gronkowski start hosting our podcast? That totally sounds like something Gronk would say.
It does. It does. You can really tell you can tell that I started drinking beer again. I just gave up on dry January. I'm back, baby. I'm back.
Brinson's pregame. He had to get his tolerance up for the Super Bowl trip. You can't go to South Beach after a dry January. That is just a health hazard waiting to happen.
Well, you know, I did do that for the Minnesota Super Bowl. I did dry January for like the full 30 days and landed, and we went out to like a company dinner, and two beers in, I felt like I was like swimming or flying or couldn't talk, couldn't make conversation. So I was like, you know, I need to ease in. I'm probably going to do another 5 days before it. But then we fly down next Sunday. We'll be in Miami for a full week, pumped for it. We're going to have tons of shows from there. Tons of great guests. We'll be recording live from Radio Row. Well, not live. We'll be recording live, and then we'll be putting it on the podcast feed. It's going to be all Super Friends all week. You ready for it? We're going to be in person. Brinson, Ryan, Breach, Debo's going to be there. Sean Wagner-McGuff will be there. Jared Dubin will be there. Yes,
Breach? Do we have to wear Speedos?
Why do you keep mentioning that I might be wearing a Speedo? I don't get
it. What is it with you and the Speedos?
I just want to make sure we don't have to wear Speedos. It sounds like something Brent's would toss on us at the last second, like email us Sunday night. But, guys, about the Pick Six podcast this week, it's in Speedos.
I drink a bunch of beer, and I have, like, I don't, you know, like.
Yeah, and you come up with those ideas after you've had a few beers.
Speedos, not where you want to be.
I know why
Cheetos,
he's talking.
Not Speedos.
He's talking about Speedos because he actually likes to wear Speedos, and he's trying to talk you into talking him into doing it so he doesn't feel awkward when he comes out to the hotel pool and nothing but a little banana hammock.
It's like the Brer Rabbit thing. Like, oh, don't make me wear a Speedo, Brinson, please. Anything but that. You can leave a 5-star review, by the way.
If you want to see Breach in a banana hammock, yeah. Leave a 5-star review.
Yeah, please save our breaches. Keep us from letting Breach wear a Speedo. Leave a 5-star review. If we get enough, we will stop Breach from doing that. If you have a question about the Super Bowl, anything game-related, prop-related, theory about how the game is going to play out, you want us to answer a question throughout the week, we'll have tons of time to talk about it, leave a review on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars. Ask a question. I've seen it on Debo's master sheet that we have for the podcast. There's rows and rows of questions that we will answer. We have them all prepared to answer. You keep leaving them. We'll get them answered. Don't you worry about it. But we got to talk about some football first. I don't want to say there were two great games, but there is something comforting about two games going exactly the way you predict. In a way, like, they weren't exciting. They weren't thrilling. The AFC Championship game and the NFC Championship game. The NFC Championship game, total snoozer, 37-20 San Francisco over Green Bay. We'll get to that one in a minute, and we'll talk about the Super Bowl, get some winners and losers, preview Chiefs 49ers. First, though, Kansas City 35, Tennessee 24. Now, Ryan and John, This is where you guys get to brag that you picked the Chiefs to go to the Super Bowl. And this is where I call you, Breach, a fraud, because you actually picked the Titans to win this game. But we knew all along you didn't really believe it, and you were just trying to, like, rile up people in Nashville. You're trying to turn into, like, a local celebrity who predicted the big run. It's over. So you can admit that this was all a shell game, fraud alert.
There are people who make millions of dollars playing that shell game on South Beach, Brinson. They hustle everyone.
Was there ever a point where you actually thought the Titans would win the game? Not just before, but in the game.
All right. I will say that in the second quarter, when they went up 17-7, in my head, I'm literally thinking this is exactly how the Titans wanted this game to play out. This first half is going absolutely perfect, and the Chiefs are going to get their points. But at that point, it wouldn't have mattered because Kansas City couldn't stop anything Tennessee was doing. You know, we came in saying, hey, the Chiefs don't have a great defense. Yeah, they kind of shut down the Texans after Houston exploded for 24 points. But that kind of everybody overlooked the fact that, yes, they still gave up those 24 points and fell behind 24-0. And so Tennessee came out, and everything they did was working. But then I'll tell you, by halftime, the Patrick Mahomes 27-yard touchdown run, in my head, that was like the nail in the coffin, because I was thinking, hey, look, Tennessee just played a perfect first half, and they're still losing. And there's no way they're going to play as good in the second half as they did in the first half. And so it kind of fell after that Mahomes touchdown run. That deflated everything for Tennessee. I mean, they still had a chance. It wasn't like the game was over at that point, but it felt like it was.
I would agree completely, and you answered another one of my questions, which was, what was the turning point? And I have written down here for my answer, halftime touchdown, as in the touchdown that the Chiefs scored right before halftime to make it 21-17. Once again, Ryan, for the second straight week in a row, a team from the AFC South came to Kansas City. They got an early lead, and once again, Patrick Mahomes went into halftime with the lead himself because of, frankly, just how well he's playing. He was the leading rusher at 8 carries for 53 yards and a touchdown. Damian Williams got in the end zone, too. Mahomes, 23 of 35, 294 passing yards, 3 touchdowns, no receptions. Pete Prisco texted me and said that Mahomes was missing guys over the top a little bit throughout the game. He's like, you probably can't see it from TV. Maybe he wasn't taking as many deep shots. But I thought Mahomes was pretty freaking masterful throughout that game.
Yeah, and it's sort of weird that he's running the ball more now than ever. He had 50-plus yards, rushing yards last week as well, and he's sort of an integral part of that running game in Andy Reid's system, which actually sort of makes sense. The best running back on the team would, in Andy Reid's system, be a quarterback. So I was looking while Breach was talking. 8 series, by my count, for the Titans offensive series. The last three, Derrick Henry didn't run the ball once. He caught a couple passes behind the line of scrimmage. They were down at that point in the second half, so you understand why. But so here's the thing. They were able to, the Chiefs defense, to stop the Titans from running the ball. We knew everything went through Derrick Henry. We saw that in the first two playoff games in New England and Baltimore, and we knew what exactly was going to happen. And Derrick Henry only had 2 runs of more than 10 yards. And they happened on the second and third series in the first half when they were obviously winning that football game. You mentioned what happened at halftime when they went down at that end of half touchdown. And I just think we were trying to figure out whether Ryan Tannehill would be able to put this team on his shoulders should it come to that. And he didn't play poorly. He was 21-31, 209 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. But he just couldn't do it by himself. He's going to get franchised or get a long-term deal. He's not going anywhere. He's part of the solution there. But it just showed that Derrick Henry couldn't do it by himself. I asked Breach last week, are you concerned about Derrick Henry being run down? And he said, no, I'm not. And he wasn't run down. It's just the Chiefs were able to slow him down enough to let Patrick Mahomes' that offense get warmed up. And once it got warmed up, just like they did last week against the Texans, it was lights out. Breach, I apologize. I pulled a Breach. I wasn't listening while you were talking because I was looking something up. Unlike last week, where we all agreed that at 24-14, when the Texans were leading and the Chiefs scored to make it 24-14, we all knew that the Chiefs were going to win that football game. When it was 10-0, did you have any sense that the Titans were going to win the game? Percentage-wise, what would you say?
No, not 10-0. It was too early. I was telling Brinson 17-7 is when I thought, wow.
Did he just ask you the exact same question I asked?
No, he asked me if I thought it was over at 10-0, and said so.
And
he admitted he wasn't listening. Yeah, because he was looking something up. So I'll just rehash that really fast.
Instead of saying the same answer, why don't
I'm going to add something on.
Why don't you listen to what Frank Clark had to say about stopping Derrick?
Had two games, each game, 70 yards, over 200 yards each game. I know damn well we wanted to win the game. We let that happen. They come in here, he ran for 70 yards. They call him the best rusher in the league. We sit in this home early.
I posted the comments that you said to me. And all over social media, everybody said you better watch your back, that you're saying things that you can't catch. Everybody on social media said,
they must not know who I am yet. They gonna find out sooner or later when I got that ring on my finger. At the end of the day, we champions. AFC, that trophy that got my own and last name on it, that's the KC. That's KC. Ain't no fall off. Last year, jump off sides, all that. I told him when I got here, this gonna change. Look at we the best in the world.
Go join.
That was fired up Frank Clark telling NFL media's James Palmer. By the way, James Palmer, good dude, better hair. You know, when I'm complimenting your hair, you got great hair. James Palmer, great hair. And he was interviewing.
Is it because it's real?
Oh, I was just.
Oh, boom. Sean wasn't here to make the joke. Someone had to.
Dunked on, and your toupee came off when he dunked on you.
Oh, man.
But anyway, Frank Clark, who had said that tackling Derrick Henry not that big a deal, talked to James Palmer and was obviously pretty fired up. Clark, Chris Jones, Clark and Chris Jones, critical to slowing down Derrick Henry breach.
They were, but I'm going to give them about 40% of the credit. I'm going to give the other 60% to Arthur Smith and the Titans just giving up on their game plan, which had not happened in the first 2 weeks. Derrick Henry only had three carries in the second half. This game was 21-17 at halftime. There's no reason your star running back, who at that point in the first half averaged nearly 4 yards per carry, which is not Derrick Henry good, but that's every other running back in the NFL good. You're averaging 4 yards per carry, three runs. That's 12 yards. You get a first down every time. You keep feeding the beast. He only got the ball three times in the entire second half, and the one that perplexed me the most was first drive of the second half, the Chiefs go, they punt. They had to punt.
37 yards, and then they punted. Yeah.
Right. And then the Titans get the ball back, and then the Chiefs get the ball back. They score a touchdown. Now they're up 28-17. And at that point, if you're Tennessee, it's like they panicked. You're only down 11 points, and all of a sudden they said, for whatever reason, oh, we got to let Tannehill sling it. Derek's done. We're not going to give him the ball anymore. We are throwing it, and that's what happened. Derrick Henry did not touch the ball on a handoff after Kansas City went up 28-17, which blew my mind, because you can still play your game because your defense is going to have to make a stop eventually. There's no reason you turn the ball over to Ryan Tannehill at that point. You keep going. You keep giving the ball to Derrick Henry. So I was surprised they did not do that. Obviously, the Chiefs did a way better job of tackling Henry than the Ravens and Patriots did, but it wasn't like they held him to 2 yards per carry. So I thought it was the Titans kind of psyched themselves out offensively, but you know, I'll give the Chiefs all the credit offensively because they just went up and down the field and it wasn't even close.
No, it's a great point, too, because as we noted previewing this game multiple times on here and elsewhere, the Titans beat the Chiefs in the regular season, and they did it in a game where they were trailing by 6 points or more three different times, and they kept running Derrick Henry as part of their comeback plan. Like, they were down 10 points and they were just feeding Henry and he broke off a long run. I thought that's sort of where they messed up, too. It's like, all of a sudden you're just being overwhelmed by the scene and what Patrick Mahomes can do on offense, and you do panic and you don't let Henry control the game. I also think, you know, one other thing that I think is important here too is that the way the Titans operated in the first half, and they're up 17-7, they were melting as much clock off as possible. They were trying to shorten the game, and it backfired a little bit because when you're down 28-17 and you've used up all of that time and it's late in the game, so to speak, you have less possessions. You have less opportunity to try and come back. And I think that was sort of a situation where they did panic a little bit. In the second half, they went 6 plays, 21 yards, punt, 4 plays, 10 yards, punt. 8 plays, 80 yards, touchdown, but that was when they were already losing by 3 scores. And so that was really, that was to cut it to 11 points, and then 5 plays, -2 yards, turnover on downs, and Patrick Mahomes takes knees.
And to Brinson's point real quick, in that regular season game, the Chiefs were winning 29-20 with 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. So they were down 2 scores, which is similar to being down 2 scores, except in the playoff game, they were down 2 scores with 14 minutes left in the fourth quarter. So they actually had more time to work with. And in the regular season game, as Brinson mentioned, they did not give up on Derrick Henry. They kept running it. They stuck to their game plan, and they came back and won. And in this game, they just tore up the playbook, threw it into the wind, and said, let's try and win it with Tannehill, which, you know, that's not a great idea.
I would just point out, and I don't disagree with what you're saying. I'm not going to blame Arthur Smith. I'm still on the Arthur Smith bandwagon. I'm in the FedEx truck. I'm not jumping off that thing just yet.
Whether it's via air or ground, his offense delivers.
There you go. So listen, so here's the first drive of the second half for the Titans. Henry had runs of 3 yards, 4 yards, and 0 yards. So not exactly the Derrick Henry we're used to seeing. They ran six plays in the third quarter. The second drive, he had one run of negative 2 yards. Actually, it was a catch, sorry. That was the only time he touched the ball on that drive in which they had run six plays total in the third quarter when the Chiefs were obviously building that lead. And the other thing, Breach, that I would point to, and you pointed to the last time they matched up, that was the first game Patty Mahomes was back from that knee dislocation, and he didn't have a rush in that game at all. He threw over 400 yards, so it wasn't like he was off his game. But I do wonder if they had a slightly different game plan, knowing that Patrick Mahomes wasn't, quote-unquote, 100%, whereas he clearly looks to be that and then some. So I'm not going to blame Arthur Smith. It was an incredibly tough situation. That 10-0 lead that they jumped out to was a great story, but no one really felt they could sustain it. Maybe they did overreact by rolling with Tannehill and seeing what could happen, but it wasn't like they had a ton of opportunities in the second half anyway. So
maybe like the rest of the world, they were stunned by Patrick Mahomes' touchdown run to close out the first half. What did Mahomes have to say about that? Glad you asked.
Yeah, they were playing a kind of a version of two-man or kind of 11-double, I guess you would say, where they were kind of doubling with Tyreek and the speed and Kelsey, obviously, with the things he did last week. And so when them playing like that, the line kind of got them all put back in, the D-linemen all kind of together in the line. So I broke it. I was thinking about just running out of bounds. And as I got to the sideline, I realized that I could cut up, and I was running down the sideline. And I knew we had two timeouts, so I was like, I might as well try to cut it back. And so I cut it back, and luckily was able to hang on to the ball and get in the end zone.
Did Andy tell you he wanted you to slide?
No, he didn't. I mean, I think that's the best thing about playing with Coach Reed, playing for Coach Reed, is that he lets you be who you are. He lets you go out there and really play the way that you want to play, as long as it's according to the guidelines of how to play the quarterback position. He lets you be who you are.
Yeah, and look, I don't want to move too quickly past it. That was a play where I got, like, I'm on a text thread with a couple friends, and it was like it was a play where everybody tweets wow at the same time, and like you get like texts on these text threads where it's like, oh my god, like Mahomes, are you kidding me? I mean, it was very weird because it wasn't Lamar Jackson, like it was very
slow motion when he runs, sort of.
Yeah, it was like it looked like he was running out of bounds, and then he tiptoes the sideline, then he breaks into the open field, and then he powered his way to the end zone, and he almost fumbled the ball when he looked up. It was crazy too, because he lands on the ground in the end zone, and he looks up and looks to the left, and he's like hoping he got a first down or something. I don't know what he's hoping. He didn't know what he was looking for. He's like, oh, end zone? Yeah, I'm going to flex then. Just an incredible physical effort. And then
are we ready for some Patrick Mahomes fun facts?
Absolutely. But I was going to – and we can talk about this a little bit, but I think that running capability is worth noting for the Super Bowl, because the 49ers have had struggles with teams, the Seahawks, the Cardinals, who and the Ravens, you know, all good teams. We're all decent teams and decent quarterbacks.
And Mason Rudolph.
True. It's a great point, Ryan.
So regarding the 27-yard touchdown, that was the longest TD run of Patrick Mahomes' career. And Mahomes has more rushing touchdowns in the playoffs, two of them, than all other quarterbacks in Chief history combined. Zero.
That's a good fun fact.
Elvis Gerback never had any?
Weird, right?
Joe Montana never had any? Or not more than Mahomes?
Trent Green didn't? None of them.
Joe Montana was the Lamar Jackson of his era. That dude could fly. I'm just kidding. He couldn't fly at all. And by the time he's playing for the Chiefs, he could barely walk. So, never. I will say that it felt like Mahomes single-handedly won this game, because that touchdown run, and you look at, I think, every single Mahomes run, none of them were designed. They were all scrambling, and actually it makes a lot of sense. Prisco's text to you that Mahomes was overthrowing guys, because it looked like he was a little bit uncomfortable throwing against this defense. And so, you know, the 27-yard touchdown run, he was kind of running around, scrambles left, couldn't find anyone. He had the ball for a while, And usually when Patrick Mahomes is holding the ball for 5 seconds, you're just waiting for a huge play to happen. You're waiting for that no-look, uncorked touchdown pass that nobody saw coming that we can all tweet about. But instead of giving us that, you know, he gave us that run. He did that multiple times in that game where he had at least 5 seconds in the pocket. There was no one there. And all of a sudden he had to take off and he would come up with these huge chunks, which would keep drives going. And you could see that just kind of totally the Titans would lose their spirit every time Mahomes came up with a huge run because, you know, they're thinking we're covering these guys. Travis Kelce's not open. Tyreek Hill's not open. Sammy frickin' Watkins isn't open. But no, Mahomes would just
put some respect on it.
Backbreaker with these runs. So I thought Mahomes' running skills was really like the huge, huge key in this game.
Hey,
before we keep going on the fun facts, I just want you to know that Sammy Watkins cost me a big chunk of cash.
You disrespected him, and you got dunked on.
In DFS, I played him last week. He didn't do anything. I didn't play him this week. I had a bunch of good lineups, all with like Mostert, Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, and I didn't play Sammy Watkins in any of them. I would have won a crap ton of money if I'd had Sammy Watkins playing. So,
people who don't know this, if you haven't heard before, so at the beginning of the season, Sean Wagner McGuff and me were telling Brinson he's an idiot if he thinks that Devontae Parker is going to have more receiving yards than Sammy Watkins. Sammy Watkins had a huge week one, had three touchdowns, over 100 receiving yards. And then Devontae Parker spent the next 16 weeks just going off. He had 1,200 total yards by the time it was over. So Sammy now, if we're including this playoff yardage, is at 863. He needs just 340 yards in the next 60 minutes of football to surpass Devontae Parker and make me and Sean a winner. But the fun fact, that's silly, obviously. The fun fact is this. Only two players have 250-plus passing yards, 3-plus passing touchdowns, and 50-plus rush yards in multiple career playoff games. Patrick Mahomes is one. Can you guys name the other?
Say it again.
What's the stat?
Neither one of you are listening.
I'm trying to tell Debo to get audio of George Kittle talking about a shirtless Jimmy G t-shirt he's wearing.
Only two players have 250-plus passing yards, 3-plus passing touchdowns, and 50-plus rushing yards in multiple career playoff games. Mahomes is one.
Kaepernick?
Two. Kaepernick makes sense.
There's only one other one now. And his name has been mentioned already on this podcast.
Joe Montana.
Joe Montana, 1984, before he got to Kansas City. So,
you know what? Because he had like 50-something rushing yards in Super Bowl 19, which is an overlooked aspect. I don't know why I know that because I know my Joe Montana history. That is pretty crazy. This is Joe Montana.
Yeah.
I told you guys he could run.
Sammy Watkins going to Miami. You know who plays football in Miami? Devontae Parker.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so
when you ask these questions, by the way, I never know if you're teeing up a clip, so I have to be quiet. So it's weird. You got to give me a signal.
Okay, I'll start trying to give you a signal. You know who else plays for Kansas City Chiefs, Ryan? Travis Kelce. Did you hear Travis Kelce? this is. By the way, there were a couple moments. So like Jim Nantz took this Kelce thing in perfectly great stride. I don't know if you saw the intro when Tyreek Hill lifted his. That came out of the tunnel and got down on all fours and lifted his leg and peed like a dog. And Jim Nantz talked. Yeah, it definitely happened. And Jim Nantz was definitely, he was like talking about an injury and just like all of a sudden went dead silent. You could tell he was like, what is that guy doing? Yeah, he came out, got down on all fours, lifted his leg and then sprinted on the field. Tyreek Hill did. After the game and much less controversial, news, Travis Kelce was on the podium with Nantz and Romo and everybody, and he was just talking about adversity and overcoming things and the lesson that he learned in Kansas City.
It's been 7 years coming, baby. I learned one thing since I've been here. You gotta fight for your right to party!
If you can't hear that very well, it's Travis Kelce saying, I've been here a long time, and the one thing I've learned, you gotta fight for your right to party! Which is a Beastie Boys line, obviously. Can either of you sing any of the lyrics to Fight for Your Right to Party?
I can't, but I can sing a little Paul Revere if you want. Let me tell you a quick story. That song came out before any of you guys were born, I think 84.
What? I was born in 81.
Okay, so you guys are three.
Your mom busted in and said, "What's that noise?"
Mom, you're just jealous. It's the Beastie Boys.
Also, that hypocrite smokes two packs a day.
1984, when that album came out, License to Ill.
Paul's Boutique?
No, License to Ill.
Oh, License to Ill. Yeah. Sorry.
Came out in 1984. Me and my buddy Scott Ladner drove his Volkswagen Scirocco to Crabtree to buy the tape cassette. That's
Crabtree's near my house.
That's right.
Ryan, for our younger listeners, what is a cassette?
And what is a mall?
It looks like it's like the shape of an iPhone, a little smaller, two little holes in the middle. You have to put it in a tape deck.
And what is a station wagon?
No, it's a Scirocco.
What is a Scirocco?
Scirocco's it was a sports car back in the day, VW. It was nice. But so that's my initial foray into Beastie Boys. It was a huge deal. Didn't go big in the Southern Baptist community. I was pumped for Travis Kelce. I like him even more now after hearing that.
The Beastie Boys are legendary. License L was the original, like one of the OG, like white Jewish rap albums of the 80s. Not many of them. So from this game, are we missing anything from this game? I feel
big
like.
Sound?
What's that?
The big guy touchdown, Dennis Kelly scored.
Yeah.
The only reason I mention that is because Adam Schefter tweeted this out during the game. The Titans traded Doriel Green Beckham, who was a wide receiver, I think like a third-round pick, second-round pick maybe, who never really worked out, sort of a big guy, looked like Corey Davis, and just wasn't able to make it work. And they traded him for Dennis Kelly. And at the time, obviously, you know how fans are. They were angry that they were trading away a potential deep play threat, and it turns out Dennis Kelly ended up catching a big guy touchdown. That's the second touchdown.
Yeah, and I would say, too, like, this is a weird game because it was 21-17 going into half. There was 0 points scored in the third quarter. Not a single point was scored. With 30 seconds left in the third quarter, the Chiefs are marching down. Tyreek Hill catches a pass from Patrick Mahomes, goes out of bounds around the 2, 3, or 4 yard line, I guess. And then immediately after that, the first play on the fourth quarter, yeah, it was the 3 yard line, Damian Williams, right side, touchdown, 28-17. That was a 7-minute drive, 13 plays, 73 yards. And that's what I think is kind of interesting about the Chiefs, too, is that people look at the Chiefs as this big play, you know, explosive, fast-scoring offense, and they are that. They can score, really quickly. And as they were eating up clock, that's when Mahomes actually hit Sammy Watkins for 60 yards. Like he'll look and look and look. And if he sees a shot down the field, he'll take it. But I think it's interesting that this Chiefs team, Breach, is very capable of sort of putting it in third gear and just going chung, 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 and moving down the field in like kind of methodical fashion. They weren't running the ball a ton, but you know, they had this 4-point lead. They knew if they go down and scored that they would be up 11. And it would, at that point, as you noted, really force the Titans to kind of completely abandon their game plan and try and win with Ryan Tannehill. So that's something to watch with this total in the Super Bowl. And with, you know, if you're thinking like, the Chiefs, you know, if they miss their big plays, they won't get it. They can score methodically. They are an incredible offense.
Well, and that was the thing. And I'm glad you brought up the Sammy Watkins touchdown, because I know I said that after the Mahomes touchdown run at the end of the half was where I was like, this is probably over. It felt like the Chiefs were going to win at that point. But for me, the dagger to the jugular, the final nail in the coffin was that Watkins touchdown pass. Because look,
you think?
Well, hold on. Let me explain, Brinson.
Then became an 18-point game and you didn't think the Titans were coming.
Well, no, because it was 28-17. It was third down. So Mahomes took a huge risk. They have been playing the two possessions, that possession and the possession before that, they went methodical. They ran it more than they passed it, which the Chiefs almost never do. You just don't see them do that because they love slinging the ball. And Andy Reid had kind of decided at that point, hey, look, I think Dean Pease is kind of confusing Mahomes a little bit. And that goes to what Briscoe was talking about with the bad throws and why he was scrambling so much and not throwing it. So we're going to run the ball because they can't stop us. So they did start in the second half running the ball a lot more. And so on that drive, that they threw the 60-yard touchdown pass to Mahomes, or the Sammy Watkins, they did run, pass, run, pass, run. So,
it was a 7-play, 88-yard drive that ate up 4 minutes and 21 seconds, and they scored on a 60-yard touchdown. Like, that's crazy to think about. They did six plays, 28 yards over like 4 minutes, almost four and a half minutes, and then they just took a bomb shot to Sammy Watkins. You're right. I mean, like, that's
right. Well, yeah, and you don't expect the bomb, because if that pass falls incomplete, the clock stops and you're punting it back and you're only up 11. So that was like the surprising part to me, that he, because he could have gone short. He could have gone across the middle or something safer to get the first down to keep the clock running. But instead, he threw this bomb, and I thought that was the play of the game. In the second half, and the dagger. So Mahomes' run obviously was the Chiefs have control. The throw to Watkins was the holy crap. That, I can't believe he just did that. But, and Mahomes makes those plays all the time.
Yeah. And look, I can't, it's hard to put into words accurately, but when they were up 4 points for the entire third quarter, it did not feel, it felt like 14. You know, and that was the same thing with the 49ers. Like, they were up, and we'll talk about that game in a second, but like, when they were up 10-0 or like 14-0, it felt like 44-0. And it just, you could just felt this control. Now look,
and when the Titans were up 17-7, it felt like they were down 25-17.
Yeah, I don't know if it was like that bad, but like, it did feel like 17-7. It's like, okay. Although I actually thought I would have been scared to bet KC live in that game, because the way that Tennessee operates, they start running downhill. And look, all credit to the Chiefs defense. You know, they got it. They slowed down the Titans rushing attack. They didn't let them run them over, and they scored quickly. And now the Chiefs are moving on. Second Super Bowl in Andy Reid's career. Very exciting for Big Red. Patrick Mahomes, has now begun his playoff career with the most passing attempts without an interception since play-by-play data was tracked in 91. His most passing touchdowns, 10 in the playoffs without an interception to begin his career since 1950. And he has his third career playoff game with 3 passing touchdowns, the most by a player before turning 25 in NFL history. For some reason, I didn't get to bet on over. No, I did. Why is that not in the odds, Debo? I looked at the sheet. I took Patrick Mahomes over passing touchdowns. You're trying to cheat me out of my money. Get my money, son.
Debo seems unconcerned.
RJ,
Debo does not seem concerned. You mentioned Reed's last Super Bowl appearance in 2004. I just want to throw out, this is guys who are on his coaching staff for that Eagles team. He had John Harbaugh as his special teams coach, Sean McDermott as a secondary guy, Pat Shurmur, and Steve Spagnuolo.
Don't you dare insult Juan Castillo.
Yeah, it's a loaded coaching staff. And now he has Eric Bieniemy, who should have a coaching job, still has Spagnuolo, and it's insane. Andy Reid puts
Bob's a stud. Dave Taub's a stud. Dave Tube.
he puts smart guys around him. That's well, Andy, where I was going.
Peterson and Matt Nagy, he's got Mike Kafka, a quarterback's coach, who's like a future coach. And yeah, I mean, I think Andy Reid, who, you know, I want him to win a Super Bowl. We should have sound from Andy Reid. Let's hear it.
Effort that they showed today, never die is kind of their thing. I mean, it's getting behind like this, tough on an old guy, but they did a nice job coming back, and you know, again, fired up to go to Miami. Need to get on a diet so I can fit in my clothes so we can go do our thing. But very proud of everybody and the job that they did.
Andy Reid's going to go on a diet 5 days before he leaves for the Super Bowl? Like,
I thought he was going to say, I'm going on a diet so I can fit in my Speedo, and I was going to fall out of my chair.
All right, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we all need diets for the Super Bowl. We've got to do some ab work. So you're going to find these things in there. Take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about Packers 49ers and look at the Super Bowl preview.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former sports center anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers? That's a butterfly effect for
real. All right, Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers. Oh, a big dance party for the analytics community. Everyone's very excited for him. 37-20, Kyle Shanahan advances to his first Super Bowl as a head coach, second. He was the offensive coordinator, of course, with the Atlanta Falcons in the dreaded 28-3 game. Raheem Mostert, the superstar in this one, 29 carries, 220 yards, 4 touchdowns. Jimmy Garoppolo finished the day 6 of 8. That's not a joke. 6 of 8 for 77 yards. And Ryan, when he was asked about it afterwards by Terry Bradshaw, he got razzed a little bit.
Came in without talking to the quarterback. I told you a while ago, your arm can't possibly be tired. You only threw 8 passes. You threw that many warming up on the sideline. I was watching you.
Your arm can't possibly be tired. He also, Terry Bradshaw, talked to Raheem Mostert, was like, I didn't know who you were earlier this year. I mispronounced your name on a highlight. I called you Mozart. Maybe I was right. Ryan, as the resident Terry Bradshaw of our podcast, thoughts on this dominating performance?
Well, let me start by saying Raheem Mostert's never started a game in his career in the NFL.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So that may change in 2 weeks' time. Here are the teams that he played for. He went to Purdue, where he was primarily a kick returner or specialist. Prior to his senior season, he had run the ball – like 43 times those 3 years. His senior season, he finally ran the ball 93 times, but primarily kick returner, was undrafted. So he was in Eagles training camp. They signed him initially, got cut. Dolphins practice squad, Ravens practice squad, Browns practice squad, Jets, Bears, and finally the 49ers in 2016 hooked him up, and he got called up, and we just saw what happened. What do you want?
Well, I was going to say that Raheem Mostert was actually mentioned this after the game.
Okay.
Each night, before each game, he looks at the list of teams that cut him.
Yeah, it's crazy that I've been on 7 different teams. I actually still have, the cut dates, and I look at that every before every game. I look at the cut dates, when I got cut. Been on 7 different teams, and the journey has been crazy. Not everybody can deal with that type of stress and pain and agony that I went through. Like I said, I kept the faith in not only myself, but whoever gave me the opportunity. And this organization has done a great job. Yeah, it's
pretty cool that, like, and Pro Football Reference tweeted out because they have transactions for every single player on their site. But he, like, I mean, it's like 2 pages worth of, like, cut by this team, waived by this team, waived by this team. And, like, when the 49ers signed him, nobody was that excited. This is perfectly Shanahan-y, and right? Like the team, this is how Mike Shanahan made his bones. He traded Clinton Portis for Champ Bailey with the Broncos and knew that he could trot out any, like, Olandis Gary or Mike Anderson. Nobody, people you'd never heard of, they could work in a system, and that's Raheem Mostert for Kyle.
It is, but don't forget, they signed, what's his name, from the Vikings for a ton of money towards ACL the first year.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Yeah, so I get it. They sort of lucked into Raheem Mostert. It's a fantastic story because if you're on 12 practice squads or 7, literally, the lesson is that you're probably not a very good football player in NFL terms. Mostert went against the grain, and part of that perhaps is that NFL teams didn't see a lot of him in college, so they didn't know what they had. And when you're buried on a practice squad, you don't get very many opportunities. I'll leave you with this before Breach adds something, I'm sure. Rob Demoski of ESPN covers the Packers, tweeted this out during the game. During Mostert's 36-yard touchdown run, one of his many touchdown runs on the evening, he hit 21.87 miles per hour, the fastest rush by anyone in the last 4 preseasons.
Every single NFL player runs 20. I think Dan Hans has pointed this out, but like every NFL player runs 22 miles an hour. It's like Nobody does 23.1?
Well, I was going to say, it almost feels like the tracker is broken. Like, that's where the tracker peaks out, because there's got to be at least one guy in the past 5 years, or since they started tracking in 2016, who has hit 23. So I'm calling NFL out.
My vote is Andy Dalton did that, but go ahead.
Tyreek Hill didn't hit 23 when he chased down his own running back from behind while trailing by 20 yards when he caught Damian Williams in the touchdown run that one time. I refuse to believe that. Refuse. Okay. You know what? The weird thing about Mostert is that, like, he even got a little lost in the shuffle with the 49ers. He had a couple big games this year during the regular season. I remember he had a huge one against the Ravens in the game they lost, ran for 146 yards. But then you look at other 2 weeks earlier, before that Ravens game, he only ran for 13 yards. So the thing about Kyle Shanahan is that he likes to ride the hot hand. Whoever's working best in the offense is who's he's going to roll with. He saw Mostert just kind of pull through the Packers defense on that first series. It was like, all right, well, we're going to go with this guy the rest of the game. And then obviously Tevin Coleman got hurt, so that kind of exacerbated that, and they decided, hey, we're definitely sticking with Raheem. But the thing it does do is, hey, look, that's another thing the Chiefs have to worry about in the Super Bowl, because if Tevin Coleman is healthy, there are literally three running backs who are number one backs in Kyle Shanahan's head who could all get the snaps at running back, whether that's catching passes, whether that's actually running the ball. That's a lot to try and figure out for a defensive coordinator is who's going to be getting the ball. And all those guys are good at different things.
Well, and it's also there. It's weird to say this, but obviously you would rather try and tackle Raheem Mostert or Tevin Coleman or Matt Breida than you would Derrick Henry. But at least like Henry's just like this giant target. You just sort of have to gang tackle him and come flying in. These guys operate in this system where there's so much pre-snap motion. There is so many different plays where the ball could be going. Like that one of the touchdown plays, they had Deebo Samuel motion on the inside and come out and end up being a blocker, like a basically fullback in motion for Raheem Mostert getting to the outside, like a quasi pitch play. And you know, and then you have like George Kittle's out there, Kyle Juszczyk's out there. You know, like they I can't pronounce his name.
Juszczyk.
Did I say Juszczyk?
It's on Twitter. He even spelled it out for people like you, Brenton. His Twitter name is literally Juice, J-U-I-C-E, check.
Right. That's what I said.
I know, said you weren't sure.
So Ryan corrected me.
I know, but I'm giving you an easy way to remember it. His Twitter name.
Well, which one is it? Juszczyk or Juszczyk?
It's Juszczyk. Sean, Breach is.
Are you Croatian or are you English? It just depends where you're from.
Breach says Jaguars, Acorn, and hip hip hurrah.
Eggcorn.
Eggcorn, sorry.
Oh, no, his Twitter handle is Juszczyk.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, Ryan. In your face, you got dunked on by the Juszczyk.
Oh, we get to pour juice on you and then check it off.
You got juice.
By the juice, man. All right. Anyway, what were we saying?
Oh, just that, I mean, like, this run game is so, like, the Titans' run game is really tough to deal with. This run game, I think, is harder to deal with in a very different way. And look, we're not going to pile on the Packers here, but we are going to praise the 49ers. They're awesome, okay? 49ers fans, they're awesome. Their defense is really good. Richard Sherman gave up one deep pass to Davante Adams at garbage time.
Made up for the end.
They snuffed out. I mean, this game was 27-0 at half, and it didn't even feel that close. Like that. Like
at any point, were you worried when it was 34-14 or whatever, the 13, whatever, the closest they got it? Any chance you thought there might be a comeback in the offing?
When they got it to 34-20, if I had been holding, you know, if you're like I had the 49ers -7.5 or -8 or whatever it was, I'd been a little worried about a back door there. That would have been annoying. My best bet for the podcast was to moneyline parlay the Packer, the 49ers and the Chiefs. I hope everybody listened and did that. That was a slam dunk winner. I also did an alternate spread parlay of Chiefs -13.5, 49ers -13.5, and that should have hit, but it didn't. I'm happy to report that Pete Prisco is a loser, and he's out of money. He has no money left in our contest. Because he's so bad at this, we actually have to reboot the contest, and I've got to do a bunch of crazy stuff in the Super Bowl to catch RJ. So we'll figure it out. Maybe if you guys are interested, you could do the contest too?
Sure. I think we're all – you're terrible on straight-up picks, Brenton. I know that's Breach's bread and butter, but I think you and I are tied – postseason.
We're going to do Super Bowl props.
No, I understand all that, but I just want to point out that I almost tracked you down during the regular season. We're still tied in the preseason, in the postseason for against the spread, and Breach is very happy to have the straight up title, which no one cares about.
I'll take the straight up title all day.
Sure, postseason straight up title ain't worth crap.
Oh, why? What's your straight up record? that's why it doesn't mean crap. Oh,
there's no tie. Like if you go like 7-2, congratulations. If you go undefeated,
what if you go 2-7?
Dunked on.
I got my third one today. Thank you.
All right, way to go. All right, go ahead.
Okay, then Prisco got dunked on. I think he went 2-7.
If you can go undefeated against the spread in the playoffs, that's like an epic run. Like nobody ever pulls that off. Like if you do that, that is an incredible run. Nobody's doing that here. Everybody had a bad run, but I got a 2 today. Don't worry about it. 2-0, baby. The 49ers didn't throw a pass. They didn't attempt to pass for an hour and a half.
Yeah. Do you know the time on the clock? Yeah, 90 minutes, right? When Jimmy G in the second half finally threw a pass?
No, but I know that so here's the time on the clock when he threw his final pass in the first half. 2 minutes and 10 seconds left in the first half, 7:45 p.m. Eastern time. What was the time on the clock when he threw his first pass in the second half, Ryan?
8:03 in the fourth quarter.
He didn't throw a pass.
There were 10 straight runs.
I mean, that's 24 minutes of game time. It's incredible.
10 straight runs to start the second half, and then they're like, all right, we'll let you throw one. It's like, you know, peewee football, and he ended up throwing two. I guess he went 2-for-2 in the second half, going 4-for-6 in the first half, and you didn't need him to. And that was, by the way, the 8:03 in the fourth quarter, that was Kittle's first catch of the game.
Yeah, he had a 19-yard catch. That was all he had. Debo Samuel, 2 catches, 46 yards. Raheem Mostert had 2 catches for 6 yards. Bourne had 1, and Emmanuel Sanders didn't have anything on 1 target. So, look, this is fine. If you can win like this, win like this. If you can go in there and exert your will, and we have been saying all year long that, and I don't want to use the F word when it comes to the Packers, but we did know that you can run on the Packers. That's sort of their weakness. They showed that at various points in time throughout the year, and the 49ers went in there. And look, this 49ers team with coach by Kyle Shanahan is intimately familiar with the Packers coaching staff. Robert Saleh, the defensive coordinator, went to college with Matt LaFleur at Central Michigan, as we pointed out in the pod. Mike Pettin used to be Kyle Shanahan's boss. And on the first Raheem Mostert touchdown, which was a 36-yard play on 3rd and 8 from the Green Bay 36, a beautiful trap play. It was like a delay handoff up the gut, and Mostert took off. Like, you could tell that Kyle Shanahan knew exactly what defense Mike Pettin was bringing on that play, Breach. And, frankly, your little alter ego got outcoached.
I mean, hey, I picked the 49ers because of everything you said. It just felt like the 49ers knew exactly everything that the Packers were going to do. It's like they were one step ahead of him the entire game. You mentioned Pettin when he was with the Browns. Shanahan was the offensive coordinator, so he had a front row seat to kind of everything Pettin was doing. And when you learn someone's tendencies up front, this isn't watching film. This is working with them day to day, knowing exactly what they were going to do. And Shanahan knew exactly how to attack everything the Packers were going to do on defense. And then on the reverse side of the ball, you have Matt LaFleur coming up with the plays for the Packers. He's got to worry about Robert Saleh, who is literally not just his college roommate, but they were groomsmen in each other's wedding. So, like, they're very familiar with each other. Plus, Mike LaFleur was the 49ers passing game coordinator. Matt LaFleur's brother is on the 49ers coaching staff. And so those between Robert Saleh and Mike LaFleur, those are two people who are intimately knowledgeable of what Matt LaFleur does and what he's going to try to do. And this, I mean, it felt like a no-win situation for the Packers going in. I'm sure by midway through the second quarter, we were all, you know, can they just have a running clock on this game? Because it's over.
Did you see Mike and Matt LaFleur hugging before the game? Did I see that? It was awesomely awkward because Matt comes up. He's like, hey, my man, Michael, like, how you doing? And Mike was like, I got to go over here. Like, you can tell he's like making some excuse. Like, I got to go over here. And Matt's like, okay, like, little brother, I love you. He's like, see you, buddy. Like, you, like, Matt was like all excited to see his bro in the field. It was like the Harbaugh brothers. Like, John was like, hey, Jim, it's good to see you. And Jim's like, hello, John. Jonathan, I must be moving on to the field for coaching and milk and steak.
Milk and steak. Worth noting, and we know this, I'll just repeat it. 49ers won four games last year, had the second overall pick. Mm-hmm. People are talking about this on Twitter, but it's worth pointing out again. Partly because I'll be at the Senior Bowl starting when you hear this, and this is sort of where it started.
Senior Bowl to the Super Bowl.
That's where it started for the 49ers because Kyle Shanahan was coaching the Senior Bowl squad last year. So they took Nick Bosa in the first round, Deebo Samuel in the second round, Mitch Wisnowski, which is Breach's favorite player in these games, the punter, Drake Greenlaw, who took over for Quan Alexander. They took him in the fifth round, and Justin Skule, who's a backup offensive tackle. All guys who contributed, all guys who had a lot to do with how this team turned it around and went from the second worst team in the league to the best team in the NFC and now trying to win a Super Bowl. So drafts matter, people. Keep that in mind. If I'm tweeting a bunch of stuff about the Senior Bowl next week and you're like, this is stupid, just know.
Ryan, so you're saying you can go from coaching staff of the Senior Bowl to a participant in the Super Bowl the next year? Is that what I'm hearing here?
Patricia.
No, he's Patricia, talking about Zach.
I'm talking about the Bengals. Brinson, but also Matt Patricia would also qualify in this instance. And the fun thing, everything Ryan just mentioned about the draft is important because the 49ers only won four games last year. Here's your fun fact. They are just the third team in NFL history to go from four wins or less in the prior season and make the Super Bowl the next season. The only other two teams to do that, the 1999 Rams and the 1988 Cincinnati Bengals, who played – the 49ers in the Super Bowl in Miami, where this Super Bowl is being held.
Isn't that where you were born on the field?
That is where I was conceived on the field, yes.
Oh, halftime show.
No, I was at that game. So the only time I was in Miami to watch the 49ers in the Super Bowl when I was 7 years old, and now I'm going to be there covering them as an adult. So it's my life's come full circle, Brinson.
Yeah, and the Bengals, like the 49ers a year before them, will be at the Senior Bowl.
That's where it ends.
Ryan points out the draft, though, but, like, in all seriousness, I mean, Mike McGlinchey, Dante Pettis, who hadn't been a big impact player this year, but, you know, has made some plays for the 49ers in the past. Fred Warner, who a third-round pick, has been a super, like, a stud. Like, he's a borderline defensive player of the year candidate. George Kittle, fifth-round pick. He's an all-pro tight end, an unbelievable blocker. Akello Witherspoon is a third-round pick that they got in 2017. C.J. Beathard, third-round pick they got in 2017.
And all the defensive linemen they drafted the last 4 or 5 years in the first round.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, like, just under – like, you look at – and we sort of made fun of the free agent acquisitions, too. Like you look at what John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan have done, and it's like, look, they could be on the hot seat if they don't win this year. They signed Richard Sherman. They signed Quan Alexander. Those were two huge additions. They traded for Dee Ford and signed him to a big contract. Another massive defensive addition. They signed Mr. Juszczyk when he first got there, and everybody's like, they're paying a fullback? This is crazy. But he's been huge, and he's a great blocking fullback and can catch passes. So, yeah, I mean, like, they have done a tremendous job building out this roster. John Lynch said,
even the Jerick McKinnon one, yeah, okay, you made a mistake. You paid him too much. That's fine. All the other ones, including Manny Sanders, who they traded for during the season, those have all been home runs or, you know, doubles.
Tevin Coleman, I think, double, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Didn't cost as much as Jerick McKinnon, but we'll quit talking about that.
I mean, I think a healthy Jerick McKinnon would be awesome in Kyle Shanahan's offense. He just tore his
ACL. We should bring up Aaron Rodgers because the 49ers won this game handily.
Deebo Slack to me, like our DMs.
Yeah, I hacked into it. You got a problem?
Well, this has happened at least 3 or 4 times, and we haven't said anything. But like,
are you now double checking to make sure I'm not CC'd on your Slack messages?
No, Breach is the human Siri. So like, if you say something to your wife or your buddy, and it shows up on your phone the next time you check Twitter, that's Breach.
Before we moved on from Titans and Chiefs, Deebo slacked me Dennis Kelly, but Ryan was like, let's not forget about Dennis Kelly, like, as he was slacking it. And then, like, he had just written, let's hit on Rodgers, and Breach is, like, diving into Rodgers. So by all means, go away. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say is that, look, they came out, they struggled, they went punt, punt, punt. So, boom, you're not looking good. Finally, they get a drive going, and they had a chance. This was their only chance to get back in the game. It was 17-0 at this point. They get a drive going, and he fumbles the snap. That's something you see from a rookie quarterback and minicamp. Not a guy who's been in the NFL since 2005, fumbling the snap. The 49ers recover, and, you know, that's where it got ugly. The Packers had driven down to San Francisco's 25-yard line, and then San Francisco recovered, got a field goal, made it 20-0. On the Packers' next possession, Rodgers threw a pretty ugly interception, and then the 49ers turned around and got a touchdown. So instead of 17-0, or if the Packers score on either of those drives, instead of 17-7, 17-10, all of a sudden it's 27-0, and it's game over, and it was because of Rodgers. I mean, it was, you can't pin those on anyone else. It was a bad throw, and you can't fumble the snap. So it was really – he made some great second-half throws, but – they were in garbage time. I don't care about those. He messed up in the first half when they needed him not to mess up.
And Rodgers knows that his own football mortality is kind of creeping on him, too.
Yeah, we weren't picked by most people to win our division. And we found a way to not only do that, but win a home playoff game and get to this spot. Just kind of felt like it was meant to be almost. So that is a little disappointing, a little more disappointing. Then you realize, you know, I don't have the same number of years ahead of me as I do behind me. So it's slightly more disappointing.
You know, I mean, yeah, it was.
Can I say something while you're thinking?
Yeah, sure.
I was watching that, and part of me is like, I wonder if he's had enough. If he just wants to be like, you know what? This is a wrap. I'm going to go hang out with Danica Patrick, drive some race cars. I don't want to do this anymore. At any point, do you think that maybe Aaron Rodgers might think about calling it or no?
No.
No? Okay.
I mean, so, all right, let me ask you this. Ash Breach first, because he's his coach. Is Aaron Rodgers still good?
He's not Aaron Rodgers good. If you're talking about compared to the Aaron Rodgers of 5 years ago, he's not even near that. Is he still a top half of the NFL quarterback, top 16? I would say yes. And if you're top 16 and he wants to stay, you have to keep him. Now, if I'm the Packers, you also have to think that, hey, we're going to need a quarterback in the next year or two, because based on this past season, I don't think Aaron Rodgers can be effective for more than, say, two more years at the most. And that's, you know, average effective, slightly above average. So I do think the Packers have to start thinking about what they're going to do at quarterback, because I don't think he's going to be around much longer. I would say 2 years at the most.
I'll say quickly, Brinson.
Oh, I have a follow-up for Breach, sorry.
Okay, he was 13th in value per play, so he's not far off from the 16th that Breach was mentioning.
Would you trade the number one overall pick in the 2020 NFL draft for Aaron Rodgers?
That is, unless you're throwing in also the Packers' first-round pick and, like, fifth-round pick, no.
And
Rodgers for a first-round pick straight – the number one overall pick straight up, not happening ever.
Rodgers and the Packers first overall – or first pick for the number one overall pick.
What are the Packers pick? Like 28, 29? Probably still not doing it.
Okay. I wouldn't do it either. For 2 years? Why? You have Joe Burrow for 15 years.
You have – it's going to sound crazy. It's going to sound crazy. But Andy Dalton's not a huge step down from Aaron Rodgers at this point. Aaron Rodgers is better, but – You're not going to give up the number one overall pick when you're only getting a little bit of a step up from what you have.
You were making sense until the last 30 seconds.
Okay, fine. But I'm not doing the trade.
this is what they call it, like in the spy world. It's like the honeypot or whatever. Like they call it an archer. Like this is a design fly trap for this Andy Dalton.
As Breach was talking, I was thinking about two things. One, Aaron Rodgers never throws interceptions. And all I could think about was the Andy Dalton facing the Patriots and just throwing as many pick sixes as possible. There's no way they're the same quarterback or even close. By the way, Brett Favre in his last year before they ran him out of Green Bay, he was fifth in value per play. So he was much better at this stage of his career, a little older probably than Aaron is now, than Rodgers played in 2019. And you can blame not having the pass catchers or whatever, but Rodgers, as Breach pointed out, has not been the Aaron Rodgers we're used to seeing.
Yeah. I don't think I would do the number one pick either, but if you had said that 2 years ago or like even before this season, people were like, offensive scheme. Like, I think people would have been like, I mean.
What about the number seven pick, the Panthers? Will they trade it for Aaron Rodgers?
Is Tua there, yes or no?
No, he's long gone.
Then, yeah, they might do that.
Oh, Joe Brady gets a toy older than him.
I think the Panthers are going to tear it all down and rebuild, but that's a different story. That's a story for another day. Anyway, look, I'm trying to do this in a way that we don't bash the Packers. We did them wrong last week. I apologize for it. I don't want to thrash the Packers. We did a bad job of it.
If we would have been nice to them last week, would it be okay to thrash them this week?
No. We didn't give them their due last week. Does this loss in any way, and you heard Rodgers talk about it, does this loss in any way diminish a 13-3 season? Do we think the Packers were more lucky? Or should this be like, this is a good building block for Matt LaFleur and they're going to have another shot? Rodgers, by the way, now 0-3 career against the 49ers in the playoffs, and he's lost three straight NFC championship games. Ouch.
Yeah, it's tough to win. The 49ers were a better team. They were playing on the road. They got down early. And getting down early, other than the fumble, the mishandled snap, none of that was really Rodgers' fault. He wasn't playing run defense. They got treaded from start to finish. We talked about Garoppolo not having to throw the ball. Look, the defense has a lot of good young players. I don't know if this means Mike Pettine needs to figure out what to do better, whether they move on from Mike Pettine. I don't know, but they have pieces in place defensively. I do wonder what the long-term plan is, and that means, as Breach pointed out, 2+ years out, is with Aaron Rodgers. But they need to get a wide receiver to help Devontae Adams. They had a lot of injuries there. All those guys are sort of the same type, body type, tall, sort of downfield guys. No one's super dynamic outside of Adams. You need a tight end. Jay Sternberger, I think, scored a touchdown. He made a few plays. He's a rookie, so that's encouraging. Aaron Jones is good. But
Jimmy Graham had a few huge plays.
Yeah, I don't know if I feel good about him long-term, though.
And I want to ask you this, Ryan, since you're the draft guy. You said they need a wide receiver. Would you say most of their draft needs right now are on offense?
Well, their defense, if their run defense sucks, I mean, you could think about someone in the middle of the defensive tackle. But, yeah, I think wide receiver is an obvious need. But, I mean, Brian Bulaga, he may be in the last year of his deal, 1 or 2 years left, so you may need to draft offensive line. And that's never a bad thing. If you're confused about who to draft, draft an offensive or defensive lineman and go about. Look, I mean, it works for the 49ers. It works for the Titans. So that's not a bad place to start. You got to protect Aaron Rodgers.
Well, and I was going to say this, just that's why the Aaron Rodgers question is so important, because if you're going to spend draft capital on wide receivers or an offensive tackle, because Bulaga is in the last year of his contract's done right now, as you just said, it expires after the 2019 season. If you're drafting wide receivers, offensive tackles, and using that draft capital in those positions, and Rodgers is regressing at a quick rate, because obviously he wasn't as good this year as he was 2 or 3 years ago, and say he's even worse next season, now you just spent your draft improving the offense when it's not going to do you any good if Rodgers still is, playing below average football.
And he holds the ball more than any other quarterback in the league, and that doesn't matter who your offensive line is. So that's something that you can't really game plan around. I think that was reportedly part of Matt LaFleur's frustration early on. I don't know if that changed. When you win 13 games, you can sort of overlook some things. So I do wonder also, and either you can pipe up on this, I do wonder if we're going to see regression with Matt LaFleur, just because I feel like he did overachieve in year one. The expectations weren't there to win 13 games.
13 wins is not replicable year after year after year after year. I mean, even the Patriots don't do that. The Packers are probably going to fall back to something like
10. Don't say it. I was going to set the over under at 9.5.
That's what it'll be, I bet, actually, when it opens up, barring like some really surprising changes. I would probably take I would take the under, because I think that, just the way that football works, you have a better chance to go 9-7 than you do 10 or plus. And they had 8 plays for 18 yards in their first 3 drives. And it didn't feel, and I saw our buddy Aaron Nagler mention this, it did feel like maybe LaFleur made a mistake in this game trying to put the ball in Rodgers' hands and let him do everything.
And it started with the first drive. They punted on 4th-and-1 from midfield.
Yeah, you can't do that. You got to come out and be aggressive.
Yeah, I mean, if you got to give it to Aaron Rodgers, you got to give it to him 4th-and-1 in the middle of the field when you know what you're up against on the road against a really good defense. That, to me, said, I'm sort of nervous.
And the other thing about the Packers, too, and I don't want to thrash the Packers, but in both games against San Francisco, in the Chargers game, you felt like they never scared you with a comeback. Like they won as front runners this year, and that's fine, or like in close games, but like they never felt like they could scare you if they were getting beat early. And that, I mean, when they were down 27-0, it's like, I mean, it never really felt scary. So they got a lot of questions this offseason. I think they have a good roster. I think they can come back and be an impressive team in the NFC. Probably take a step back, but maybe in year two of Matt LaFleur's system. This is the first time Aaron Rodgers has ever rebooted the offense in his entire career with the Packers. So, there were some change, adjustments to be made, and he made them.
Can I ask more question?
You may.
Who wins more games next year? John and or Brinson. Aaron Rodgers and the Packers or Mike McCarthy and the Cowboys?
Ooh, that's a great question.
We can save it for later.
I would take the Cowboys just because I think they play in an easier division.
Season. Yeah, I take the Cowboys. There's always a first-year head coach bounce back, you know. Okay, we got to point out real quickly that Richard Sherman just destroyed Darrell Revis on
the Twitter machines.
Yeah. So Revis tweets out in the fourth quarter of this game, the Packers 49ers game. Fear of getting beaten, man-to-man coverage, every snap, every play. The fact that he doesn't travel as a cornerback is lame. Accept the challenge. He misspelled accept. He spelled it E-X-C-E-P-T. The challenge is the best and shut Adams down, Devontae Adams down the entire game. Do it for the game of football. Stop hiding a cover three zone. He took a screenshot of Sherman being beaten on that long 60-plus yard pass play to Devontae Adams. Sherman naturally found the tweet very quickly. And by the way, like within minutes of tweeting that, Sherman makes the game-ending interception. Wasn't in man coverage. Whatever. It's fine. Sherman goes onto Twitter and about 15 minutes after the game tweets, I would go in on this. I would go in on this has been, but I have a Super Bowl to prepare for. Enjoy the view from the couch. Your ninth year looked a lot different than this. LMAO.
I would just say one thing. Revis was completely wrong. But you actually called him out for misspelling accept. He spelled accept right.
He did? Somebody else called him out in the comments. Oh, he did, right, yeah.
So of all the things.
That's not how you spell accept.
E-X-E-E-P-T.
Yeah, you wouldn't say accept the challenge.
Oh, I was just looking at the grammatical spelling. Dude, you're right.
Ellen, get out of here, faux clown.
He used the wrong version.
You're getting dunked on by a state guy when it comes to academics?
Well, I was reading, and I goes, I think that's how you spell accept. I had to double check. But yeah, you're right. I will say this. No, you got a little layup on me. I'll give you that. It is weird that Revis would say this because I've heard several cornerbacks, Ike Taylor, Sherman's talked about this as well. When you play on one side, especially when you play on the defensive left, and Joe Hayden does this as well for the Steelers, you do it for a reason because you always see the quarterback, a right-handed quarterback, is always looking at your half of the field when he drops back and allows you to read certain route combinations a lot easier than if you're running around back and forth. And we'll have to ask B-Mac about that at the Super Bowl because he would definitely know. But it's a weird thing for Revis to say, who's going to be a Hall of Famer. It just goes back to their – I don't even remember what their original beefs were about.
They always beef. Sherman has never been given the best cornerback in the game title, even though he was the best cornerback in the game for at least 1 year. Revis at his peak was better, but – Like he's just mad that Sherman plays zone. But, like, Sherman's great at what he does. He takes away one side of the field. And he actually moved a little bit, I believe, in this game, as Debo has pointed out to me. All right, we're going to get to the Super Bowl preview real quick. We're going to try and get out in 90 minutes, so be a record for this podcast. But
Sean's clearly the problem. When he's not here, we can move right through it.
That's right. Well, we're already at an hour, so we're not.
Oh, right, never mind.
And I'm about to read a promo for – look, I got to tell you, football – there's only one football game left, and I'm sad because football is gone, but that means that I get to dive into my true love. I'm serious when I say this, golf. And the PGA Tour is back, baby. It's back on CBS for the 2020 Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines. Ryan, we did a live blog at Torrey Pines. Remember Tiger Torrey's ACL and beat out Rocco the Plumber?
2008, baby. That's how long ago that was.
Yeah. The First Cut podcast is back, too. It's your destination for all things regarding Tiger's 2020 season debut. What are we talking about, Tiger? Tiger's an 8-time winner at Torrey Pines with his most memorable victory. Oh, coming in the 2008 U.S. Open, Tuesday's First Cut episode will feature an extensive DFS and betting preview from gurus Rick I don't know how to pronounce Rick's last name. It doesn't matter because that's Rick Run Good. You know what Rick Run Good said? He said the new Scotty Scheffler in the one and dones. I watch Rick's videos on DFS. I love golf DFS. He slayed it this week. Download and subscribe to the First Cut Podcast wherever you find Pick Six for top-notch golf analysis and reactions. Rick actually, he kills it. He said Ricky Fowler, who was leading early, and Scottie Scheffler were some of the plays for one and done. Those guys would have made you some cash. Nobody had Andrew Landry winning this thing on Sunday. Except Ryan predicted Andrew Landry would win. Yep. We're talking about Nationals baseball. What are you talking about, Diva? My true love?
That's your true love.
Nationals baseball. Oh, man, I love football season going away. I can really settle in on the sports I love, baseball and golf. All right, so Super Bowl preview. I don't really mean that. I love football. 49ers versus the Chiefs. Chiefs minus one. We did our YouTube look ahead to break down the lines. We are apparently already getting flambéed in the commentary by 49ers fans who want to know why we all picked the Chiefs. Why did you pick the Chiefs, Ryan?
Two words, Patrick Mahomes. And I'll also repeat what I said at the beginning of the YouTube exclusive. Andy Reid off the bye. Andy Reid
off the bye.
That's my concern.
Your speed's a little off on it, right? Andy Reid off the bye. Andy Reid off the bye. There you go.
Yeah, well, we're doing it from 500 miles apart, so it makes it a little more difficult to time up the lip syncing. But, yes, we both agree Andy Reid off the bye is dangerous. Breach, what's the stat?
19-3 straight up in his career, including the playoffs, when coming off a bye. That's a pretty strong stat.
But I will say this about the 49ers. None of the fans on YouTube yelling at us will hear this, but Daniel Jeremiah points this out, and it's something to keep in mind. San Francisco's defense rushes four, and they rush four better than any defense in the NFL, and that's exactly what you have to do to beat Patrick Mahomes in this offense. You can't have five and six guys trying to rush Patrick Mahomes and get him off his spot because he will beat you to death. So it'll be a good matchup defensively versus that offense. But if the train gets rolling in terms of the Andy Reid offense with Patrick Mahomes as the conductor, that can make for a long afternoon. But I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I think the spread when we talked about it was minus one KC. And if it's within a touchdown, that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. I mean, that is, it's fascinating because neither of these coaches really, it's been 15 years since Andy Reid has been in a Super Bowl. And you don't know how a coach is going to respond to that kind of pressure. Because let's be honest, we've seen the Chiefs choke away some of the craziest playoff games ever. And they've kind of overcome that because they had some good comebacks the past 2 weeks. Came back from 24-0, came back down from 17-7. But it still happens to this team, and that's something you're always worried about. If you're a Chiefs fan, that's something you think about in the back of your head. But on the flip side, it's not like Kyle Shanahan. I mean, the last time we saw him in a Super Bowl, he lost his playbook. He lost the Falcons' offensive playbook in Houston, and luckily a reporter found it and returned it instead of, like, the wrong hands getting on it. And then, obviously, he was the offense coordinator who was coming up with the plays that did not get the Falcons to a Super Bowl win because they blew a 28-3 lead. So those are not good Super Bowl memories for the coaches. But, you know, if you just look straight up at what these two teams are going to do, Ryan mentioned a lot. It's strength on strength with the Chiefs passing game versus the 49ers passing game. But I think that Patrick Mahomes is so good, he absolutely gives them an edge. And the thing is, if you look at both teams on offense, you know, I do think the 49ers have a better offense, or the Chiefs have a better offense, even though the 49ers are equally explosive. I think they average more points per game this season than the Chiefs did. But it's like you look at 49ers' best players, George Kittle, where the Chiefs have their own George Kittle because they have Travis Kelce, who's just as good at tight end. The Chiefs have a better receiving core. I just think that it's going to be close. There's a reason this is a one-point spread, and I like Kansas City right now, but I could change my mind in the next 5 days.
I want to like Kansas City. I want Kansas City to win for Andy Reid, and I'm going to pick Kansas City because I picked him back in – I hope people listen, by the way, on this podcast when I said before Week 17 to take the Chiefs at 7-1 to win the Super Bowl. You guys remember that, right? I said that a bunch, didn't I?
Yeah, right after you talked about Garrett Bradbury winning the rookie deal.
You know, how often did I say it?
I don't remember it.
Yeah, you said it. We got you. Go ahead.
All I'm saying is that if you have that, now you can hedge off. You can take the 49ers at plus 1.5, and then you have a window. Chiefs win the Super Bowl by one, and you're making a bunch of money. I wouldn't mind that necessarily. I think part of my concern here is that I don't know if the Chiefs – I don't think – So, like, we saw the Chiefs, what the Chiefs did against the Texans. We saw what they did against the Titans. I don't think they can do it as easily against the 49ers. This 49ers team is much, much better at rushing the passer and much, much better on the back end in terms of defensive coverage than the Titans and the Texans. Having said that, I don't know that the matchups are very good for the 49ers from a defensive perspective, because we talk about Richard Sherman, he can take away one side of the field, and he's awesome doing that. But Andy Reid schematically can – you have Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, Mecole Hardman, Travis Kelce, Damian Williams catches a bunch of passes. They have all these guys who can sort of move around in different spots and catch balls from every single position that I don't know if it's a good – matchup for the 49ers from that perspective. Like, I just think you can see either Travis Kelce sort of posting up in zones. You can see Tyreek Hill taking the top off. Like, Richard Sherman and Richard Sherman is not a good matchup for, like, he matches up poorly against Tyreek Hill. You know what I'm saying?
Who doesn't?
Well, but like, Sherman, you want big, lanky, powerful, wide, like a Mike Evans type. Like, that's who Richard Sherman
is. Fair enough. Maybe Steph Gilmore is the only person that could do a decent job, not even a good job, against Tyreek. Tyreek Hill is, I mean, impossible.
I mean, he's just, yeah, he's small. He runs.
I guarantee you this, Richard Sherman is going to dominate Sammy Watkins. I hate to say it.
If they waste Richard Sherman on, I mean, I bet Andy Reid will throw Sammy Watkins to the wolves and say, go deal with Richard Sherman and get him out of my face.
Well, let me ask you guys this. So against the Texans, the Chiefs were down 24-0. Against the Titans, they were down 10-0. Let's say they get down 14-0 in the first quarter.
That's a problem.
In the Super Bowl to the 49ers. How do you feel about the 49ers winning that thing over the final 45 minutes?
If it's 14-0 at the end of the first quarter, I think the 49ers live would be -3.5.
That's it.
Maybe -5. Vegas got torched in that Texans game for a ton of money on the live betting.
Thanks, market. Bill O'Brien.
Cause like everybody and their brother was peppering Kansas City as a short favorite and then as a dog. And then it was over by halftime. And the same thing sort of happened with Tennessee. Like Tennessee was never favored. When they were up 17-7, they were +120 and like on the money line, because Vegas was like, nope, not doing it. Not getting burned again. And so I think they'll be cautious there. I just think the difference is, like, if the 49ers have a 14-point lead, they can do what the Titans wanted to do, which is get downhill with Derrick Henry. And I don't know that the Chiefs will just completely snuff out the 49ers run game. Now, Jimmy Garoppolo is a huge X factor here. He threw passes in this game. 8.
You know, one thing I was going to say about that I didn't was that after he got hit, he took a sack. He got bent in a weird position. And Dr. David Chow, our boy on Twitter, was saying he's lucky he didn't like re-tear his ACL or seriously injure his ankle or knee.
Did you see the angle that Fox showed where he was like screaming and like grabbing his knee?
Right. And so he had thrown 5 passes up to that point. He only threw 3 after that. And part of me at the end of the game wondered whether that played a role where Kyle Shanahan did not want to put him in harm's way. He's thinking, hey, look, our run game's going. I don't need to do this to Jimmy. He doesn't need to be taking these hits. Let's get him through this game because our run game can handle it on its own right now. And then he has 2 weeks to heal and we'll get to the Super Bowl. And that is really kind of what it felt like. And one thing, since Sean's not here to throw out DVOA, I will say that the Chiefs played 4 of the top 8 DVOA defenses this year and they beat all 4 teams.
That's a fun fact. Would hypothetically, if Jimmy Garoppolo had to miss the Super Bowl, what would that do to the point spread, do you think?
Who's the number 2? Is it Beathard?
Yeah. I mean, I think Chiefs would be like 6-point favorites.
I think it'd only go up to 3.
No way. I think I'm much closer to 7.
You're talking about taking out the start. I mean, like, Jimmy G's not that great, but like, you're taking out a starting quarterback and plugging in a backup for the freaking Super Bowl?
First passes he's thrown all year, I believe.
Yeah, it's like a Nick Foles situation where he's been like just sort of blacking out and getting hot. He's got to step in and take care of the Super Bowl.
Right, but you're also talking about two quarterbacks that got plenty of experience last season with Garoppolo with the torn ACL, and they ran the offense pretty efficiently. I mean, the 49ers weren't winning because their defense wasn't great, but there were games where, I mean, both quarterbacks
Well, Mullins
is the Nick Mullins is Nick Mullins the backup or is it Nick Mullins is the backup? Beathard's the third string, I think. Yeah, so it'd be Nick Mullins in there, and Nick Mullins had a pretty strong season. I don't think you would be. Garoppolo's not worth 6 points, is what I'm saying. I don't think it'd be seven.
Let me put it this way: I think we're both right. I think that Breach is correct. The drop off from Jimmy G to the backup is not worth 5 points. But I would not be surprised if the initial reactionary move in Vegas was to bump it really far, so that way people couldn't get the Chiefs for cheap. And it might not be worth a speculative buy now on the Chiefs before, like, if what are they like? Jimmy G tore his ACL.
Like, yeah, he did, because he would have been yelling and screaming, and he would have been limping around.
I mean, like Reed said, how do we know he didn't throw the ball?
Yeah, but I mean, he went back out there, and unless you're Phillip Rivers, you're not going back out there when you tear your ACL.
Or Jay Cutler.
Did he have a torn ACL?
He did something in that 2010 game.
To your point, by the way, Baltimore won in DVOA this year by far number one. Kansas City 2, they beat Baltimore, of course. Did they beat Baltimore? Yeah, they beat Baltimore. New England 3, Kansas City beat them. New Orleans 4, San Francisco beat them. San Francisco 5. Dallas, Minnesota, Seattle, Tennessee, Green Bay, your top 10 in DVOA. Okay. So we think, and that total has
Dito. Yeah, so they beat four of the top 10, not four of the top 8.
Hey, in terms of value per play, Jimmy GQ was 11th, which is ahead of Aaron Rodgers and Deshaun Watson. Make it that way, you will. Not last year, Nick Mullins was 18th, which was impressive for Nick Mullins coming out of nowhere, but I think slightly more than not much of a drop off between Jimmy G and Nick Mullins.
If Patrick Mahomes didn't play and Matt Moore did, then it would point spread would switch about 10 points.
Yes, it would, John. The total at the Westgate, it's already 53.5 at the Westgate. I wouldn't be surprised if it climbed. I don't think it'll get above 56. I mean, that would be insane. That's 8 touchdowns. But 55 wouldn't be crazy. This could be a high-scoring game. Like, we got 57 points from the Packers and the 49ers in that game, and that total was 45.
So I'll say what I said on the YouTube exclusive. Last year's Patriots-Rams was 55.5. They scored 16 points.
There's no way these two teams score less than 20 points.
Did you like the over last year in that game? I can't even remember that far back. Okay.
Of course.
I mean, who knew that Sean McVay was going to be awestruck by seeing Bill Belichick in person and decide to throw away his play sheet?
Yeah. I mean, there could have been a few more points scored there, but I mean, like 16 was not ideal. Okay. Anything else from the preview that you guys want to mention about this game?
I will just say that the over was the thing opening at 52 points, the over under was a little bit weird because these are 49ers and Chiefs were two of the five highest scoring teams in the NFL this year. 49ers averaged 29.9 points per game. The Chiefs, that was second highest behind only the Ravens. Chiefs averaged 28.2, which was number five in the NFL. And the Chiefs are averaging 43 points per game in the playoffs. So, like, I don't think the 49ers aren't going to score because the Chiefs' defense hasn't been great. They've been giving up points despite these huge blowout wins. It feels like the 49ers are going to get theirs. It's just whether or not the Chiefs are going to be able to outscore them.
You know what I would actually like in this game? First half under, second half over. I could see both teams kind of coming out a little slow, running the ball, Super Bowl nerves. You've been off 2 weeks. You're trying to creep it in like that. And then all of a sudden, second half gets insane and we see a ton of points.
I would also like to say that this Super Bowl will cap a great run of sports for the Bay Area over the past decade. From the 2010 season to the 2019 season, because this is the end of the 2019 season, the Bay Area had 10 teams or 10 major sports finals, the Giants in 3 World Series, the Warriors in 5 NBA finals, and now the 49ers in their second Super Bowl.
You forgot to mention the Raiders.
And hockey, you jerk. How about the Sharks?
Did the Sharks win a Stanley Cup in there, Brinson?
Yes, of course. Don't you pay any attention? They were in one, right? They went in or they just in it?
Just in it.
Okay.
They were in it to win it.
They were in it to win it, at least. And the Kings won a – do the Kings count?
That's Los Angeles. Come on,
That's Sacramento.
Are they in Sacramento now?
No, I'm talking about the NBA team.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm talking about the baseball team, the Kings. They play in Oakland. The Oakland Kings.
Uh-huh. Are you done?
The A's made the playoffs a few times, Brinson.
I can get one of you on that.
we don't have Brinson's kidding anymore.
All right, winners and losers from Sunday's divisional action. Who wants to go first? Breach, you can. Give me a winner.
The winner is Andy Reid, because by God, he's going back to the Super Bowl. I can't wait to see his collection of Hawaiian shirts. Usually we only get to see him at the annual coaches meeting. There is no way he's not going to be wearing them on South Beach. So by all accounts, that doesn't just make Andy Reid the winner. That makes us, the viewing public, the winner, because we get to see that man parading around in his Hawaiian shirts.
My winner was going to be Andy Reid, and I was going to sing it, but Breach didn't even sing it and stole
Andy Reid off the bye. Andy Reid off the bye. Ryan is not high because he's known my song about off the bye.
I'm going with Raheem Mostert. Cut 7 times at least. Keeps a little note about how many times and when he was cut. Uses a motivation. It all came together. Perfect timing. 200-something yards rushing. 4 touchdowns, I believe. Hasn't started a game this season. Great story, and he will almost certainly be an integral part of their game plan in Super Bowl 54.
I have 2 winners, and I will then sling it back towards y'all. If you want to do more winners, great. If you want to jump to losers, that's fine. Breach, you can go next, unless Ryan has a winner. One winner, Mike McCarthy.
What?
He's in the Cowboys now. The Packers did the same thing they did when he was there. What did they do that's any better?
He didn't get to an NFC title game last year.
He went to 3 in a row and lost them all.
Yeah, but it vindicates the Packers. They will be for firing him. Yeah, you have to explain this one harder, Brinson.
Did Aaron Rodgers get better this year when Mike McCarthy left? They were just – okay, we said we weren't going to thrash the Packers in here. Look at us.
We are not.
I set my own fly trap to get Brinson.
You're Brinson, right? You fell for it.
I just watched them get like – like, I don't know, just, I feel, Aaron Rodgers, I don't feel like much season, it was like pointing blame at Mike McCarthy, and I don't feel like you can do that, like blame him for all the troubles of the Packers now.
So just so we're clear, listeners, this is Will Brinson making his point.
My number 2 winner, the Tennessee Titans, because even though they lost today, they had a great season, and as Breach has pointed out, and it's been noted by the CBA, they can tag Derrick Henry and Marcus Mariota Ryan Tannehill this offseason. And by the way, all the talk about Amari Cooper and Dak Prescott, the Cowboys can do the same thing. So,
you know what else is a winner?
Oh, wait, real quick on that. I just want to say real quick that if they agree to a new CBA, I think that takes over for the old CBA, and then that you cannot use both tags. So those teams
they won't figure out a new CBA by the new league year. Those are implemented after the 2020 offseason.
Because they would have to figure out and sign it. But if they did, the teams wouldn't get 2 tags. Just want to put it out there.
There's like a 0.1% chance they hammer out a new CBA by March 18th.
As you were talking about the Titans, it reminded me of one more winner.
Well,
Mike Vrabel's wiener.
Oh, that's a good point. Mike Vrabel didn't have to cut off his penis. So that is exciting. Do you think are the Titans in good shape for the long haul?
Yeah, I was just thinking, unlike the Packers where we have some trepidation about what 2020 might look like, you know, you're bringing back Derrick Henry, you're going to get Ryan Tannehill back. Even if Tannehill's 90% of what we saw this season, that defense is going to get better. Dean Pease has done a fantastic job. The offensive line is good. The playmakers, your boy A.J. Brown, you love. Adam Humphries came back for the first time in 6 games, and he was a contributor. I think they're the favorites right now in the AFC South for me.
But if you're the Titans, are you worried about the fact that, I mean, even if you transition and franchise tag Tannehill and Derrick Henry, you're eventually going to have to pay them and probably a lot of money, especially if Tannehill is just 90% as good as he was this past year. If he's that good next year, he's going to get $30 million a year if he does this again. And Henry is going to get $15 million if he does this again. You're going to have to give him Zeke money.
No. See, no, that's not right. With Henry – what you do is you transition tag and hope somebody makes him an offer, and then you just match the offer. And so you hope it's like $12 million a year. And then with Tannehill, I think you tag him and just give him a deal before – get a deal done before freaking Mahomes does it or Deshaun Watson does it or who
else.
Right,
but that's just kicking the can down the street. If Henry runs for 1,600 yards next year on the transition tag, then you have to give him that deal, the long-term extension after that.
You let him walk. You don't keep
him walk? What?
Yeah.
Or you franchise tag him.
Your whole offense is built around him.
Your whole offense is built around that offensive line being really good. Like I said, look, Deion, what's Deion's last name? I remember. Deion is. He ain't doing what we saw Derrick Henry do. I mean, we can all agree on that. But I feel like you can't pay him $16 million a year for 3 years or whatever. That's just, it's crazy talk.
Okay, time to debate this offseason. All right.
I got one more winner. Okay. My one more winner is actually three people. It is me, Ryan, and Sean, because each week I am apparently need to shower myself with wins. The three of us picked the Chiefs in the preseason to win the Super Bowl, and they are in the Super Bowl. And I know you should have listened to Brinson before Week 17, but if you listened to us in the preseason, you could have gotten the Chiefs at 11-1 odds.
Boom.
And you'd be holding a pretty strong ticket right now.
That's not true. They weren't 11-1.
Yeah, they were. You want me to pull it up preseason?
Yeah, that'd be
great.
Yeah,
Patriots were ahead, Rams.
Yeah, go ahead and pull it up. That'd be great if you pull it up.
I love how you call up Reach's bluff. He's about to dunk
all over. Should we wait till I pull it up, or what are we going to do?
Hey.
We have a separate podcast, too, where
– for dunking?
No, it's 3.5 hours long, and we list every single media member who picked the Chiefs to make the Super Bowl.
I love that. You can never just let someone enjoy their moment.
Brinson, who did you pick to win the Super Bowl then in that case?
The Vikings, the same team you
picked.
Oh,
dunked on. Every single media member didn't pick the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl.
All right, what do we got left?
Loser? Yeah.
All right, Brinson's a loser because he picked the Vikings. That's mine. What else?
Who's a loser, Ryan?
Let's see. The Titans, I think you're right. I think they're the winners. So I think it's sort of Aaron Rodgers only because –
Yeah, that's a good one.
He alluded to it in his press conference. I don't know when or if I will be back. And I'm sure he wished he'd played better. They didn't lose because of the way he played. They lost because their run defense was straight up doo-doo. But just in terms of Aaron Rodgers' short-term career, Breach mentioned he probably has two solid years left, high-level Aaron Rodgers play, and there's no guarantee they're coming back, especially we just talked about are they going to be the same team they were next year they were this year? Probably not. So Aaron Rodgers is my loser, even though he's the first ballot Hall of Famer and he's had a fantastic career.
My loser, very quickly, is John Breach, because I was able to find the odds for the Chiefs faster than he was and put it in the Slack. 6-1. You hate to see it.
He's got nothing.
You pulled up Pro Football Reference. That's not. Well, Breach's not. Yeah, give me a second.
What are you going to pull up?
Well, I'm going to pull up the correct answer.
Was a professional football database too much? Was not appropriate for finding statistics?
Well, I can't make a bet with Pro Football Reference, so yes, that is not a great place. Because why? You got to go someplace where you can actually make a bet. You can't call up Pro Football Reference and make a bet, Brinson.
Brinson, well, if you go to breachbook.com, you'll find that it's 11-1.
Let me know the bookie that will take the preseason Chiefs odds bet right now. I'd like to bet on the Chiefs to play the 49ers in the Super Bowl at 42-1.
Oh, what does Debo got?
Debo ain't dunk on me. Let's see what happens.
You hate? Oh, dang on it.
Breach got dunked on. Yeah.
No, he's got him at 7-1. Let's see.
That's what I just said, man. You said 11-1. There is nowhere on the planet the Chiefs were ever 11-1 before the season started.
It might have been when they were 4-2 and Matt Moore was in. I'm going to find it. You guys keep talking. I'll bring it up on next podcast.
When we thought Patrick Mahomes was going to be missing for 6 weeks and his knee might have exploded. Yeah,
if you made your bet before the season, you were going to get you would rebet. You put more money on it.
I will just say this. I don't like siding with Brinson typically in these things, but the Bears were 12-1. So you're telling me that the Chiefs are only 11-1. Oh, Lord have mercy. All right. Are we doing losers? Are we done? What are we doing?
Because
I think my loser, Aaron Rodgers.
Who's your loser, Breach, besides yourself?
Wait, is it my turn?
Yes. If you want it to be.
Okay. My loser.
Before I should point out that preseason, the Bengals were 200-1 to win. You got 8-1? Are you like trying to grovel with 8-1? This is sad. Get out of here.
No, I'm just showing you that 6-1 is not the answer. Just give me a second. I don't have time to
Google.
I don't have time to find everything on the internet. My loser is probably not Sammy Watkins. Definitely not Sammy Watkins. You know what? My loser is Matt LaFleur. I hate to do this to my doppelganger, but if I'm a loser for not being able to find these 11-1 odds, he's going down with me. The one part I do agree with about Brinson saying McCarthy was a winner is that I think Matt LaFleur might have just set the bar too high for himself because there's a lot of pressure in Green Bay. You go 13-3, and we're talking about, hey, what if they go 9-7 next year? That's not good enough anymore. People are going to say they're going to complain, and all of a sudden you're going to be on the hot seat if you have two straight seasons of 9-7. And so getting the NFC title game your rookie year as a coach is awesome, going 13-3. But all of a sudden it does feel like you're with the Packers. The bar is set too high. And now if you don't hit double-digit wins, you're going to be viewed as a failure.
You know, I'm going to say that Andy Reid is actually a loser because, well, if the Packers had beaten the 49ers somehow, and it feels like that never would have happened, Andy Reid was getting his Super Bowl. And so now I think, like, the Chiefs would have been 7-point favorites of the Packers in the Super Bowl, right? Probably, maybe.
Yeah. Although you're also now backhanding Packers fans once again on your way out the door.
I am, sorry. I don't think there are a lot of losers from this, the way this weekend played out. I mean, the 7-point favorites won pretty handily. I don't really think Andy Reid's a loser. But I firmly believe if the Chiefs were playing the Packers, the Chiefs would win by 30 points, and it wouldn't be remotely close. I do think the 49ers can give them a problem in the Super Bowl, but it's going to be an awesome game. It's a pick 'em, and man, we're excited to cover it all week long. Coming up, we have Kenny White. This coming week, we got Kenny White. We're going to break down Super Bowl trends. Brian McFadden and Pete Prisco are going to share Super Bowl memories. Sure. Brady Quinn and Ryan. Well, Brady Quinn will have anyway. It'll be an emergency podcast of Brady.
Yeah.
And then Ryan will be talking to us from the Senior Bowl. You're leaving. When are you leaving?
I'll be on the plane noon Monday.
Direct flight from Q-Mobile?
Almost direct. Had to make a stop in Atlanta for 3 hours.
Actually not bad to get a one stop.
Yeah, it's fine.
All right. And Breach, I'll see you on Sunday. Oh, man, we're a week away. We're less than a week away. We're going to be hanging out in Miami.
Hey, listen, just like Andy Reid, go on your diets. Got to fit into your Hawaiian shirts.
Man, I should have mentioned this at the top of the show, but I'll mention it right now just in case anybody's still listening 90 minutes in. But Heath Cummings has said that we are going to all go. I think on Thursday we're going to go to Concrete
Beach.
There's a brewery we're all going to go to. We'll get details. I'll get details on the next pod and put it out in the beginning. But we're going to, if you're in Miami, come hang with us. We'll all be down there on Thursday pounding IPAs and getting saucy. For Debo, for Sean, RIP. For Breach and Ryan. Talk to you guys later.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.